G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. The television is in the main room.
I was in the main room.
Not in the office.
I thought you were getting one in the office.
No, I don't want to talk about it. All right? We're just moving on from it.
Why wouldn't you get one in the office? Doesn't make any sense. Because you're...
I said, Daniel, I don't want to talk about it. It's very sensitive, all right? I'm not getting a new television. I've come to terms with it.
But you're only going to get a new one in the big room, I imagine, now. With the stand being lost, you're going to get a new big one in the big room.
Yeah, well, the stand... Anyway, I'm not talking about it. I'm in a good mood because... Not because of the Collingwood-Sydney game, but because of the Gold Coast St Kilda game... But also, it is always exciting when we do the program when there is a live golf major championship taking place as we're on air. It's even more exciting when an Australian leads.
Nah, not after round one.
And that is what is happening at the moment.
You're getting carried away. Carried away you are with round one actions. Not only midway through round one. I'm getting to Adam Ramanas because he's going to settle things up. He's going to straighten us up here on a Friday morning. The former Bombers champion these days, manager to the Stars. Rama, good morning.
Very good morning. And, look, setbacks are a tough thing in life, and Whitey's faced a couple over the last few days. So particularly when his lovely wife was texting me photos just to rub it in even more.
That was the highlight of my week, I must admit. I got the photo and the message, and with the scorecard, Emma 1, Adam 0.
Yes.
And
yes.
And I just read it as it came from Whitey, and he was sending that message himself. I didn't even realise that the number had come through, and I didn't have it in my phone. I didn't know who it was. Didn't even look at that part. I just thought it was coming from Whitey. And then I worked out it was coming from Emma. She'd gone to the effort of getting my number off Adam and then sending the message through. And clearly she's got your number off Adam as well and sent it through. Like, it's a real victory lap, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and really... this is how I think it sort of has played out over the last couple of weeks in the White household, that he's been really rubbing it in to his wife that we're getting the new TV. I don't care what you say. You're not going to find the TV stand. But his wife has gone one better. She's just gone and bought a new stand without him even knowing about it and then just set the TV up. And he's walked in and he's had to then have a look at it on the wall. And he couldn't believe it. He was flat, and then he tried to justify it to me. Ah, the TV's big enough anyway. You know, 60-inch will do. I'll just get on with it. So, it's a very sad state of affairs for Whitey, but I just love that his lovely wife has got one over him now.
Yeah, I think he's pretty pumped about it too, and fair enough too. Fair enough too. I think it's good business. Good business. Look at him. Look at him.
Well, I'm about to log off and just go back to bed, to be honest.
Oh,
yeah, be like that. That's just being, you're being nasty.
Oh, you're right.
No, I'm not really.
Do you need a cuddle?
I tell you what, watching that Sydney Collingwood game, a hammer almost went through that television.
Mm. Why is that? But,
Whitey, in saying that, I understand the Pies dominated that game.
Don't defend that game.
I'm not defending the game. I'm just saying the Pies had to win that game, and they found a way to eventually win it. Their kicking was obviously atrocious in the first half, but they could have easily rolled over, but they continued to work. And then obviously a bit of Dacos magic in the dying stages of the last quarter seals the game, but they just had to win it for their season. They had to win that game.
And they did, and they won it by 9 points. Now, it was an overly entertaining affair, I must admit. And the Swans don't help themselves the way they do things at times. Although, gee, they played some good, exciting footy through the middle of the park a couple of times and just weren't able to execute Rama and get any reward for their effort. And I think that's more a personnel issue than anything else, I must admit. But they tried a few things, the Sydney Swans. They're trying to be a bit more dynamic in their play. But only 33 inside 50s hurts.
I think they're slowly changing their style of game. We've always known Sydney to be a really dour team. But now I think they're recognising what they've obviously got in their list with the amount of youth they've got and what type of player that youth is. And they're slowly turning into a real ball movement team now. Now, the key or the trick to this is obviously no Franklin in the side, and he's still going to be in Sydney for obviously a few more years if he decides to continue to play, which we all expect that he obviously will. But a faster ball moving team in Sydney will help Franklin, give him more opportunities, I would suspect. Now, can Sydney play that style of play on the SCG being the smaller ground? That's going to be the trick to it all, and I'm not sure, but I like their trying. I'm not used to seeing Sydney take so many risks through the middle of the ground. I'm not used to seeing Sydney take so many risks from stoppage, try to come out the front of the stoppage. It's just not the way Sydney have played for so many years.
Well, last night, Sydney had these players representing the red and the white. Taylor, Bell, Ling, Melican, Wicks, McCartan, Stevens, Florent, Hayward, Dawson, Rowbottom. I mean, these are sorts of players that are the future of Sydney. Some of them we've heard a little bit about, Melican and Florent, etc. But a lot of guys have played very little football at all. Now, that's being forced in a lot of ways because of the injuries Sydney have got. But when you throw in the mix that youth and a little bit of a different way of trying to play, it is different. But it still doesn't excuse last night's game.
For those names that you mentioned, Whitey, they're all quick players. They're all dynamic players. They're all ball movement players. So, you know, that's the part that impresses me with Sydney's recruiting.
Look, we know the way Sydney plays and we know the way they're trying to change. So that excuses a little bit of a mess. But for me with Collingwood, I mean, that's now 7 games in a row that the Magpies have failed to be able to kick 10 goals in a game. They've won kicking 6 goals. Now, yes, they kick 6 goals, 14. And I know Collingwood have got some players out. Yeah, I know that. And Collingwood have got players out, but they are not the team they were. And I don't know why. They're playing differently, but they are. And I just think that's why they're off the pace with the best teams in the competition, because the really good teams have the ability to hit the scoreboard and Collingwood don't at the moment.
Yeah, that's a problem for them, but I still think they are one of the really good teams, and they're just, as Remmer said at the start, I think it's a really good call, Remmer, that they just need to win at the moment. They just need to get through these games and win, and the outcomes, how that happens and what it looks like doesn't really matter at the moment, because they want to get half their team back and their real quality players back at some stage, and that will change the whole system that they're running, I reckon. So I'm sort of in Remmer's camp on the Magpies. I'm not losing too much love. I can imagine the frustration being a Magpie supporter watching the way they're going about it at the moment, and that's fair. But I think it's just a matter of survival for them, just to get through, because they're good enough to crank it up later on.
That survival became a little bit more difficult last night with the injuries. So Treloar does a hamstring.
Yeah.
Obviously, Hoskin Elliott with an injury, and then Quainer with a really odd injury with a massive gash to the front of his shin. It looked like on the telecast last night that he'd broken the lower part of his leg, but you know, then it's revealed after the game that he's got a 6 to 8 centimetre gash to the front of his leg. He just got caught up in, I think it was the first game, or in Wicks's stops.
Yeah. I think it was a bit longer than that, actually. The photo I saw of the gash looked pretty long, half the size of the shin. So that was a bit of a setback for Isaac. But thankfully, I think it's a pretty clean slice.
Yeah, so
should be able to stitch it up nicely and evenly and get that looked after. But it does raise an interesting point. I mean, because one of the criticisms I've had of the players in the last couple of weeks, Remmer and White, is that they fall over a lot. There's a lot of falling over going on. So, and I blamed that, just sitting back on my couch watching, on the cleats, the moulded cleats that seem to be a part of the modern players boot rack when their boots these days, where they're not really deep, they're just sort of there. I'm not sure why they in fact exist. They're almost better to have a grass cap these days than the cleats that they wear, because they've clearly got no traction. So the moulded sole, the old screw-in soles that we used to wear, Rammer and Whitey, that I don't know how they make them anymore.
No, I don't think a lot of them exist.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder too whether the new age boots are some of the reasons why we get the injuries we get, the ankle injuries and those sorts of things, because they don't have the support in the foot that maybe the boots had previously, because they're like wearing slippers half the time. You just wonder whether that has something to do with the increase in ankle injuries. I don't know. I'm not sure. But you're right. They do definitely fall over a lot more, but they also do a lot of other things that are a bit frustrating too.
But there were some photos going around last night on socials about that boot that Wicks was wearing. Yeah. And the style of it, and the studs that come through along with the molded cleats as well, so it's a two-pronged attack. They didn't look unusual from the old screw-ins that we used to wear.
No. I think last night I thought was a really interesting sort of comparison between the two games, and I did think of you yesterday, or last night, Daniel, when you were talking about movement. And the one thing that happened last night with both St Kilda and the Gold Coast Suns was that they want to move the ball on. And we're talking about Melbourne and Adelaide, where they kicked down the line, everyone would stand still. Well, it was the complete opposite watching the St Kilda Gold Coast game, where there was a lot of play on from marks and play on from free kicks and stop play situations. And then you'd look up and you'd see the movement ahead of the ball, and it created an entertaining game. And it's not just about entertaining, you're wanting to try and win, obviously, but you had two teams that where their intent was to try and score and move the ball as quickly as possible, and we saw a lot of open football, very different to what we saw in the earlier game, where the ball was invariably moved slowly to congestion. So it just shows I don't believe the rules need to be changed. I think the intent needs to be changed, and we saw that with high marks in the forward line, one-on-one contests around the ground, because teams wanted to move the ball fast.
And that was a significant win for St Kilda last night, because they got the lead and then they were challenged, and Gold Coast actually took the lead back, but then they were good enough to get over the top of the Suns in the end. Dan Butler was terrific with his four goals, but that's a team that's maturing before our eyes, I think, this season, the way they were able to win that game, because they could have easily said, no, this is all a little bit too hard. Gold Coast, home deck, you know, they're coming at us, but to their credit, they dug in and they were able to win that game.
Well, if you look at their last three games, half, they kicked away from Port Adelaide in the last quarter like a good team. Sydney challenged them in the third quarter in the wet last game, and it looked like it was getting a bit dicey for them, and they went to another gear and pushed away from Sydney. And then last night, having kicked four in a row, they gave up four in a row, and as Rama said, they didn't lose their composure, and they kicked the last three to get over the line, or three of the last four to get over the line. I think it does show some maturity, as well as the want to play positive football.
I'll tell you who I'm drafting if I get a pick and I can go back in time. I'm drafting Hunter Clark. Oh. His last couple of minutes is the reason you drafted him.
Composure.
Yeah. Oh, boy, he was outstanding with his composure and the way he thought through situations, Rammer, and then was able to execute skill. He has skill. Like, he's one of the few players these days that can use the ball by foot and hand as well. The handballing in modern football is atrocious. He is a real talent, and more than just a skillful player. He thinks about things really quickly and is able to make decisions really quickly. More often than not, they're right.
So an early one for both you guys. It sets up now for Monday night with St Kilda taking on Geelong. Who you got?
Well, I can't give too much away before we get to the Friday footy preview with Boomer after eight.
I wouldn't worry about your tips too much anyway, Harper.
Shut up, idiot.
I'd like to put another player forward that has improved considerably, I think, this year, that goes under the radar a little bit, and that's Josh Battle.
Yep.
He did a couple of things last night that good footballers do, and particularly late when he took that contested mark, and went back and just looked really calm and just threaded the goal, and you just knew he was going to kick it. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, they're going well. The Saints sitting second on the table. They're going beautifully. They're going better than well. They're going beautifully at the moment. Although I think, in my eye, Gold Coast got more out of that game than St Kilda did. The way they've been going.
That might be a fair call.
I think they, not that St Kilda lost, but I think Gold Coast won in my eyes, and the way they were able to play and compete and hit the lead, trail and hit the lead and obviously cough it up a little bit late, but it was a great game of footy. Lydia Williams is going gangbusters in the world of world football, soccer, and she's not only the Hyundai W League Westfield W League goalkeeper of the year for the Melbourne City team, who are the dominant forces we know through the W League campaign. And not only is she the Matildas goalkeeper, she's just signed a deal to play with Arsenal in the Women's Super League in England. It's going to be awesome to watch her in action with a couple of Aussie teammates on board. And she joins us on the Breakfast Club. Lydia, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
It is great to have you on the program. We've been watching you in goals for a lot of years now with the Matildas and with Melbourne City in more recent years. And, of course, now an opportunity in the Women's Super League, which seems to be opening up, Lydia, for a lot of Aussies at the moment. How exciting is it?
Yeah, a lot of us are over here, so it's kind of nice that we've been able to kind of catch up and trade stories of, you know, each other's clubs and experiences so far. But, yeah, I think this is kind of the next stepping stone to really progress our own careers, and especially with the Matildas as well.
And what about being involved with a club like Arsenal, like one of the most famous clubs in English football? When you get the phone call from them saying, do you want to come and hang with us for a bit, how does that feel for you?
I mean, it's crazy over here. It's ridiculous just, you know, how much it's driven by such a professional club and people that love the game. And it's been a great experience so far, and so I'm actually like really chuffed to be here.
Lydia, did the Australian flavour at Arsenal help that decision for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously I played under Joe before, so I know how he works, and he's been one of my favourite coaches. So when he asked me and the opportunity arose, I was, you know, basically didn't really have to say no more.
And why now? Why, obviously 30, so you still got a lot of football ahead of you, but why was the time right for you now to go over to the Women's Super League there in England?
I mean, you could see it at the World Cup. Most of the, finalists are European nations, and, you know, they're doing something right over here in Europe and really putting in a lot of money and support between the women's game. So, for me, it was just like, why not? Why now? I need to do it. So, for me, it was a no-brainer. I just needed to figure out where I was going to go, and England and Arsenal was kind of the first choice and ended up being the best choice.
So, Lydia, explain to us about what it's like football in the UK, because we've obviously got Sam Kerr playing at Chelsea and yourself playing at Arsenal. There's others sort of in the mix there as well. How big is the sport, and also just that whole Arsenal experience and being indoctrinated in that culture?
I think when we go play over in America, majority of the teams, it was really kind of Australian internationals and American internationals, maybe some Canadians as well. So we're only really getting exposed to, you know, only a few cultures and countries, where, you know, just in our Arsenal team, I think we have about 8 different, like, people from different cities and different countries, and they're the best in their national teams. So just the level that you get exposed to different players and different styles of football and their touch and professionalism, I think it's the next step. It's so easy to kind of play in Europe with so many different nations. So yeah, it's definitely, it takes you to a better level and a new level.
We keep hearing when players move overseas, Lydia, that they play a different style of football. Wherever they go, it could be Japan or Europe or the Americas or certainly down here in Oceania, they play a different style of football. As a goalkeeper, do you have to goalkeep differently to different styles, or is it the one sort of job on the field that the styles really don't affect you?
I think at the end of the day, we just have to save the ball. sometimes that gets a little bit overlooked sometimes, but I think as a coach coming in right now, it's really important for a goalkeeper to be able to play and use their feet. So that's definitely something that now needs to be and has been exposed to a lot of goalkeepers recently. And I think that's probably the one thing that we've had to adapt to is that, you know, no longer do we just, you know, use our hands and be like, oh, that's enough for me. We actually have to be, you know, just as good as with our feet as an outfield player. So yeah. It's kind of like we have to work on multiple assets of our game now.
At headquarters tomorrow for the major metropolitan meeting. That's what we do on the Friday form for first-time players. Go through the quaddy legs and a few other little specials from Dino and Quinny for the day's play. But let's have a look at the first leg of the quaddy team. The Group 3 Ori Star Handicap, the kick-off proceedings in the quaddy tomorrow. So lots of horses that we know, Dino. Good exposed form and a good chance to get our eye in early. We've got Great Again for Lindsay Smith as a favourite in this 11-horse field. In fact, there's been a scratching. Number six, Senor Fox, is outside the 10-horse field. But Great Again is favourite at $4 at tab.com.au.
And he should be, I think, Daniel. He's got race fitness on his side. He likes wet ground, and he's proven down the straight. So I think he's got a lot in his favour, Great Again. In saying that, it's a good competitive race. I think Sosie Bond, last year's winner, and what he did at the end of last campaign was become a bit of a winner. He loves wet ground. He's trialled up well. Home of the Braves, second in this race to Voodoo Lad a couple of years ago, and his runs down the straight have been good. The problem is he hasn't won since he's been in Australia, I don't think, or he certainly hasn't won these last 10 runs. And with G Turf, he'll be running on late. You expect 1400s where he'll come into his own against these sort of horses, but he can be competitive. But yeah, I think Great Again's the one to beat.
Great Again's the one to beat. Quinny, is Great Again the one to beat?
Great Again does hit the market at $4. So I think I'm on a little bit of a delay today. I'm not sure why, so sorry for cutting you off before. Home of the Brave, a 440 second elect. Widgie Turf on the next line of betting there at 550. Hightail, 8. Dino, I want to ask you about two runners. I'll ask both questions to stop going back and forth so we don't cut each other off. First is Trope, who's now with the new stable. An excellent interview yesterday with Michael Felgate, listening to Julius, and also Yulong January, who had that really good summer campaign, winning 4 on the bounce, and resumes here.
Yeah, Trope is, he's a talent, but he's won one race, and now with Julius Sander, and he has trialled okay, but I do like him better on drier ground as well. And Yulong January, he's just a terrific 1,400-metre horse, and I think he'll peak for those 1,400-metre races in, say, 4 or 5 weeks. There's the Sofitel at Flemington, and then the Rupert Clark Stakes. I think they're the races that we'll probably see him peak for.
So numbers, the way we do this for first-time players is we get Adam Ramanaskas to do something finally on the program, and he takes numbers for us, and he writes them down religiously, and he sends them in the WhatsApp group a little bit later on. Rama, first leg numbers, please, for the quaddie tomorrow at Flemington.
5, 1, 2, and 4.
5, 1, 2, and 4 for the first leg. Let's have a look at the second leg over the 2,000 metres. It's a benchmark 78 affair. And there are 13 going around, Dino. When you look in the middle of the field, we see Chris Waller bringing a couple down or having a couple in this this meeting tomorrow. Skyman is second up after a first-up victory and very strong in the market at $2.80 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, probably in total opposite to how he presented first up in the market when he won at Flemington. He was at Caulfield. He was very good odds there, $26. The race was set up for him to run well, the way he just sat on the back of the main chances. But, gee, he was impressive, and I think he's a good winning chance again. I think a fair chance Chris Waller will win it, whether it be with Skyman or Kentucky Tornado, who I thought ran very well first up at Sandown. The extra distance will suit. Little chances to De Niro, who just had absolutely no luck last start. Loves soft ground. Any more, the rain would be a bonus for him. And Cadre du Nord, first run in Australia for the Mar Eustace stable, yielded a pretty good run at Moonee Valley. Now, that was the Ballarat meeting that was transferred to Moonee Valley, so this is a stronger race, but does handle a wet. So I think they're the main chances, but it's a good chance that Chris Waller will win the race.
Actually, what for our punters out there listening, Dino, what sort of surface are you doing your form on at the moment for tomorrow's meeting?
Look, I think it's rated a soft 6 at the moment, but with continual rain, it's got to be close to a... I'm thinking a genuine soft track, maybe borderline heavy. So if we certainly get the rain that's predicted over the next 24 hours.
Okay, all right, so that's something to keep in mind for the punters out there as well. Quinny, we've got a pretty firm favourite there for Chris Waller, but Dino's got a little bit of a sniff about his other runner as well, in Kentucky Tornado. What's the market say?
Well, Kentucky Tornado, a $9 chance. The Skyman market, though, has been pretty popular. $4 into 280, heads the market from Cape de Noir, who's a 650 second elect. De Niro at 7. Do you know of the runners you've left out of the quaddy? Crimson Ace is the shortest one at Cranbourne at Mornington earlier in the campaign. It was well held at Flemington in the last start. You're obviously taking on Crimson Ace?
Reluctantly, because I actually think she's better suited back to 2,000 metres. Her last few runs have been over longer trips. But that's the thing, whether she'll be sharp enough at the end of 2,000 coming off a 2,800 metre run. But I do think the actual distance suits her a bit better.
All righty. Good news for you too, Quinny, is that that delay has been eradicated with that reset. So well done to you. Good stuff. So you can just jump in there
and
tell me
like...
No, no. It's great to have more of you than less of you, Quinny. We love you here in the Friday form. You know that. Rammer, what are the numbers, please, for the second leg of the quaddy?
5, 8, 10, and 9.
5, 8, 10, and 9. So that means we're two winners in. We need just two more to go. And race 8 gives us a chance to continue our momentum. A benchmark 90 affair over the 1,000 metres at headquarters tomorrow. And another good, decent-sized field. Not capacity fields tomorrow, Dino, but decent-sized fields. Are you a bit surprised at the number of runners or the field sizes tomorrow?
Actually went back through the last few years, Daniel, and it's very much in keeping with the last 3 years anyway. I think... there are 100 acceptors, and last year there was the same, and the 2 years prior was 97, 98. So it's, it seems to be a bit of a constant at this meeting. It's really a transition meeting because next week we get into the PB Lawrence Stakes, the Vane Stakes, the Grisette Stakes. So this is probably the last chance for the restricted horses to be really racing regularly on a Saturday.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Good insight. So race 8 is 11 horses deep because we've had number 10, Messerschmitt, for the Freedmans come out of the race. Someone scratching there. And Octane, Philip Stokes, Jamie Carr on the saddle. It's had a very nice campaign, Dino. Fourth on resumption and two wins back-to-back. The Tab have Octane very firm favourite at 280 tomorrow for the 1,000-metre sprint.
Yes, well, he's been a fascinating horse, Daniel, because he was a very, very high-priced yearling, $1.4 million. And as a colt and a half-brother to a horse that is very fond to me in the quarterback. And you know that with your breeding expertise, of course, Daniel.
Of course, and, Serena. Serena's and them.
That's correct. And that's it. It's a great, thank you, Daniel. It's a great visual on radio, and it was. It's a very good book, that one that you're holding up. Octane, I think, was sold very cheaply because he was going poorly as a colt, and he was gelded, and he's won 5 of his last 6. He's really putting it together, very much like his half-brother did, actually. He was a much better horse once he was gelded, and... he's a good chance, Octane. I think there's a bit of a value chance here too in number 8, Spirit of Aquata, who was just basically in the wrong race last start at Weight for Age. Level weights with Jungle Edge on wet ground. He was never going to be able to beat Jungle Edge, but he went okay, and his straight form is terrific. That close-up run to Alpha Oro earlier in the preparation, it sticks in my mind, and he handles soft ground. So I'm just tipping him at a bit of odds, but I respect Octane. He's still very much a work in progress. He carries his head very high and he's a bit awkward going, but he's a real talent. Chicago Cub is an absolute beauty down the straight and goes well fresh, handles the wet. There's plenty to like about him. He's trialled up okay. And Rock Prophet, this horse has improved a lot this campaign. His first up win was good and his run at Flemington last start was excellent. That was beyond Wilmot Pass, who probably should have won easily last Saturday at Moonee Valley. So that form's okay. So good competitive race. Real interest around Octane, but I think there's a bit of value as well.
Well, I'm just having a bit of a look at the sneaky little value you've given us for Spirit of Aquata. Quinny, can you enlighten us as to the price of Spirit of Aquata? In fact, there's been movement just then.
Has been $23 into 16. So currently a $16 chance. Octane at $2.80 market leader. Dino, what sort of quote do you think Spirit of Aquata should be?
He should be, as I get that. That's a very good question you asked, Nicholas. I've got him marked about $6.50.
Oh boy, Well, when you mentioned it before, I was looking at the TAB website, Quinny. $18 it was, and as soon as he said it, it moved into 16. You said 23 initially, but 18 to 16 in the last 30 seconds.
That's what we call an early market mover. Still $4 a place, so considering Dino's got the horse rated 650 a win, I think that might be pretty popular as well. And Crimson Ace, Dino, a horse that's been racing in really good form, but you've left, Mr. Mowgli, a horse racing really good form, you've left out of the quad. He won at Flemington, two starts to go, a beaten favourite behind Bumper Blast last start. Is there a little knock here on Mr. Mowgli?
Probably, I'm thinking they'll, with the rail out 10 metres, they'll be centred to outside down the straight. So barrier one's always a challenge when you've got that. He actually overcame that to win two starts back, but that was a benchmark 78 level. And now he's got to do it at the benchmark 9. He ran pretty well last start, and that's the race that Snitzcraft comes through as well. It was a pretty bunch finish. If you're going wider, he might be next in line. But, I'm pretty happy with the four we've got there.
Pretty happy with the four we've got there.
Do you think Octane at about 280 is about fair, or do you think maybe should be a little better?
Only slightly better. I've got him marked $3. So he's around his right price.
Well, you've done a pretty good job there, Quinny. Well done. Not far off. We can just get the drift out a little bit, if you don't mind, just to help the punters that like Octane. But I reckon there might be a bit of investment in the number 8 here. Rammer, what are those numbers again, please?
8, 6, 2 and 12.
We're three legs into the Saturday quad at Flemington tomorrow. We've got one leg to go, Dino. We need the winner of this, obviously. We've got three winners. We need four for the quad. That's the game. We've got a full field. One scratching, Muzzlebrook, comes out. Number 2, which means the first emergency gets a start tomorrow at this stage. And that, of course, is number 16, Antagonizer. Let's have a look at the market at tab.com.au, because the favourite, Dino, is in the middle of the field again for the Busset and Young Yard. Savvy Lad out of Barrier 3, 480 at tab.com.au, second up.
Yeah, look, I think it's going to be a really good race for the four-year-olds here, Daniel. The recently turned four-year-olds taking on the older horses. And one of those is the horse you mentioned that's got a start in Antagonizer. I thought he'd had a bit of time between his second trial and his first up run, and I just think he needed that run. It was a really testing race at Sandown. He's got good Flemington form. He's got soft track form. Jamie Carter ride. I think he's a terrific chance here, Antagonizer. But I'm giving good chances to 7 Savvy Lad, who was very unlucky first up. He mid-race got a lot of interference, and that's the absolute peak of the late season three-year-old form. Behind Mystery Shot, so I respect him greatly. 9, Lord Markle, won the race that I mentioned at Sandown, that to antagonise and contest it. I just think he got on the right part of the track, but he did a good job nonetheless. And Pinion, she just doesn't win very often. Her one run at 1400 was a good effort, and she'll be somewhere in the mix. I've got her next best, but I think it's a good race for these early season four-year-olds to dominate this race.
All right, so the emergency gets a bit of a look here, Quinny, which is always interesting, because we're not quite sure sometimes how to play the emergency situation, but we're getting a run this time around. How did the market respond to that?
Has trimmed up ever so slightly, but still very nice odds, Antagonizer, at $13 in from $15 and $3.10 the place. So I dare say that will be popular in the next couple of minutes on number 16, Antagonizer. Savvy Lad, a 480 favourite. Pinion, a $5 second elect. Then we've got Lord Markle at $7.50. Just back to Antagonizer, Dino. Two questions. Do you factor in the second up form as well? Because the two previous second up runs have probably been the two career best performances, a win at Bendigo and a Flemington placing. And currently $13, 12 to 1 in the old. What sort of quote do you think Antagonizer should be?
I do take in that second up form, and seem to have done a lot of research on this horse, Nick. It's as though you've been tipping him as well.
Yeah, apologies for that.
Yes, he's got a look. Price wise, he still should be minimum $8, but he's a good each way chance at a price.
All righty. So let's have a look at those numbers, Rama. Can you please go through them for the punters?
16, 7, 9, and 12.
You know what's happened? I've just got a text from a mate who said I've just woken up. I had a bit of a sleep in this morning, and I've just caught the last number there, 12. Can you help me out with their full set of numbers for tomorrow's quaddie, please, on the Friday form?
Yes, I can. Race 6, 5, 1, 2, and 4. Race 7, 5, 8, 10, and 9. Race 8, 8, 6, 2, and 12. And then race 9, 16, 7, 9, and 12.
All right. So they are your quaddie numbers. Check your local guides for more details. Of course, make sure you tune in tomorrow morning for the full set from Dino. Updated information with scratchings and all on RSN 927. But that's to give you a chance to get a bit of a cider on a Friday morning, getting ready for the Saturday quaddie. Dino, the formula bet today, who are we playing for and what have you got in store for us, please?
Joanne Gordon of Mitcham, and for Joanne, just going away from the real short price favourites tomorrow, and we'll have $40 on race 2, number 2, Galactic Fury, $40 the win on race 3, number 6, Cafe Rizou, and $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 2, number 2, into race 3, number 6, that's for Joanne Gordon of Mitcham.
All right, good luck to you, Joanne. What does that come to, Quinny, please?
$3.50 the first leg, and $6.50 the Ooh. Second leg. So nice odds available there on the Dino All Up.
Righty-o, $3.50 into $6.50, if you don't mind, for race three, 2, number 2, into race 3, number 6. And if I got that right, that's about $22.75. Plus the multiplier, or multiplied by the multiplier. And who knows where that takes you at the Tab app. So good luck, Joanne, for your all-up, your formula bet with Dino tomorrow. All right, Dino, you mentioned race 8 number... What did you mention before? Race 8 number 8, Spirit of Aquata, is one of your selections in the quaddy today. Is that your Ramarafi, or have you got something else for us?
No, I'm going to go to the last leg of the quaddy, Daniel. Race 9, number 16, Antagonizer, is the best value. I think he's got a terrific chance at each way odds. I think they've both got good chances, but Antagonizer's the Rammer's Ruffy.
And what was that again, Quinny?
Well, it's just firmed again as we speak. So the money continues here for Antagonizer. Has been well backed. Now into $12 since Dino gave the little push, and I must apologise because that's now back-to-back yes. weeks. I've tipped the same horse in the Herald Sun as my value selection that Dino's made, the Ramarafi. Thank goodness the Herald Sun is published first, because not even I would believe I wasn't copying the great man.
So before the Friday form, Quinny, was there ever any movement in markets quite like we're experiencing here at the Tab now that we've got Dino doing his thing on Fridays?
It is quite extraordinary. I just want to know, Dino, do you have any interest in shares? Because if you could move the marketplace there as well, it'd be equally as profitable.
No, I leave that to much smarter the minds than mine. So hopefully, yeah, we just can get the horses right. That it's more immediate anyway. We can get a results quicker.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Hey, Dino, before we let you go, and you've done a great job for us again on the Friday form, all fired up. You might know this, and I don't know if you do, but I'll throw it at you. There's a couple of SMSs suggesting that All Fired Up is actually an Australian composition, first recorded in the 1980s by a Sydney pub band, Bengal Tigers, says Mark. And then the very next SMS that's come through says All Fired Up was written by the singer from Little Heroes as a Melbourne band, it's in Rod and Bendigo. Do you know much about the All Fired Up?
No, I don't know the backstory, Daniel. I remember Little Heroes, but I don't know the backstory.
All right, well, there's a couple of little contrasting messages there, but seemingly it's an Aussie song sung by the great Pat Benatar. And you've been all fired up for us today, and we can't wait to hear you all fired up tomorrow morning on RSN 927 and the build-up to a big day at Flemington, Dino. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Good stuff, Dean Lester, the world's greatest form analyst with us on the Friday form. Quinny, you've given a bit of a heads up into your selection, perhaps, for the punters. What is it?
Well, I won't be changing my selection to last Antagonizer, that's for sure. I do need to take a mulligan, though. Sorry, I gave Dino a bit of a spoil with his all-up bet. It comes to $16.10, so still an incredible quote, and hopefully can get the job done for his legion of fans, but not quite the 20-1 that I did just recently quote. But my best bet comes up tomorrow at Flemington, race 8, number 6, Octane. This horse absolutely flying at the moment, and I think we'll get the job done in the third leg of the quaddie. And I might be taking now a duet with Dino's selection, number 8, Spirit of Aquata.
A duet? Are they still going?
Australia's favourite bedtime.
The best things about the Tokyo Olympics not going ahead is the fact that we get a chance to speak to some of the people that should be there. We had Kate Campbell on last week, and today, 400-metre Olympic gold medalist from 2016 Beijing Games, Mac Horton has been good enough to join us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Mac.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Not a problem. Any time we get a chance to have a chat to you is a good thing. How have you felt throughout this period? We had a chat to Kate last week about the opening ceremony night, or what would have been opening ceremony, and her emotions. How have you found this period?
The first 2 weeks were probably a bit tough, or the whole first lockdown, really. I think the first 2 weeks we were out of the water. It was kind of a bit of a novelty for me. I hadn't had a break in a while. But by the time we started getting on to 6 or 8 weeks, that was the longest I'd had out of the water before I started swimming when I was 10. So struggled through that a bit. But getting back into it, I've really been loving it and appreciating it because of that time out. And I think I'm excited by all the time that we now have to perfect things, really. It's a free year, essentially.
What was your first emotion when you've heard the Olympics were called off? Tokyo this year was called off. What were the first things that went through your head?
Sounds about right. I think probably 2 weeks or so before they were officially called off, seeing what's going on around the world, and it's like there's no way an Olympics can go ahead with what's going on. It just didn't seem quite right. And so it's like thinking about that, but then also rocking up to training and trying to get the most out of yourself, not really believing that the event should be going ahead, was a strange place to be, because they're kind of opposite sides and you need to fully believe to get the most out of yourself. When they postponed it, it was probably kind of a relief. It was like, okay, that's what I thought. Let's just take a break now, reset, and get ready for next year.
Mac, if they didn't postpone it, would have you been comfortable going to Tokyo still?
I would do whatever I have to do. I don't know if I would have been comfortable. It's hard to say, though, now knowing what we now know versus back then what I thought I knew. But I definitely would have had a crack.
So I asked this same question to Kate Campbell last week. With you now being one of the senior members of the Dolphins team, swimming is such an individual sport, but if you had to take on more of a leadership role with the more younger members of the team about how they've handled the situation, you talk about yourself, how you're handling the situation, but the younger members would be probably so confused and probably nervous about what's happening now.
Yeah. Well, firstly, I still feel like a younger member of the team. I forget that I'm one of the older ones now. I think it's probably the same with everyone going through this. They've reached out to people that they probably wouldn't usually, just to check in on them. And probably everyone is communicating better than we were before when things were normal, just because you have to. You have to check in on your friends, your teammates. Which has been really nice because I'm in contact with more of the team than I would normally be. But I also think it's quite interesting for younger swimmers because a lot of the Olympics is about generational luck. It's every 4 years. So to be the right age, the right, level of fitness or speed at that moment every 4 years is, as I said, very lucky. So there's a lot of younger swimmers who are probably would have been on the cusp of this year that might now have a shot next year, given the year they have to get stuck into some work.
So, Mac, just talking about that generational luck, have you thought about the Olympics not going ahead next year and what that may mean for you and your own career?
I can't think about it if I want to keep swimming every day. So I haven't thought about it yet. When it happens, if it happens, I'll think about it.
Yeah, it's very similar to what Kate said to us last week. I'm interested, Mac, about what you did when you weren't in the pool. You talked about how it's kind of all you've done, and from a sports perspective, since you were a young boy, to have that break. What did you choose to do, and what did you choose definitely not to do during that break?
Well, first it was kind of fun. I was just like sleeping in, eating whatever I wanted. And then, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks in, I started to get pretty bored. So I started running, cycling, doing gym. I built a chin-up bar. I was doing Lego, like trying to stay fit, trying to stay active. But it was interesting, I think, to ride, I guess, the wave of emotions that I assume normal people have day to day, because I'm so used to starting my day exactly the same way. You know, wake up at 5:30, get to the pool, do a session, and then my day begins. So I'm used to that consistency, whereas with this, no consistency, no structure, I was a mess. And it was like some days I just wanted to lay in bed all day, some days I wanted to go for like a 3-hour ride. So yeah, it was an interesting experience to go through, as I'm sure everyone found.
Yeah, so I think that's really interesting, because I don't think it matters whether you're a professional athlete or whether you're, you know, people that are listening to this may have lost their employment for a period of time, or trying to juggle family commitments, that everyone's getting, I think, a greater perspective on what is important to them. Have you found that the case as well?
Yeah, definitely. Just really having the contact with my family. So I don't live with my parents or my brother anymore. And especially during this lockdown, which is a lot harsher, you realise how important it is to you to be able to see them and your friends as well. Ella, my girlfriend, and I are constantly Zooming or FaceTiming friends and family just to keep in touch with everyone, which is quite nice, actually, because you end up seeing people more than you would in a normal life. And I think when we do go back to a normal life, everyone's going to be super appreciative of the time that they have with each other.
And I know you're sick to death of talking about Sun Yang, so I'm not going to ask you about him, but do you want that gold medal?
That's a sneaky question.
It is a sneaky question.
Gold medals for me represent it's not so much about the gold medal in general. It's more about the journey getting there. So even my Rio gold medal, like, it's cool to have, but the actual thing represents the years leading up to that, and that's what I treasure more than the actual medal.
That makes perfect sense. And the one I wanted to ask about Sun Yang wasn't about Sun Yang as such, but that extra year of sort of a gap between the controversy and you actually participating again, do you see that a benefit, that there's going to be less of talk about it once we actually get to an Olympics?
We'll see if questions like this keep coming up, but time is always good. Time is always appreciated, I think.
Danny Widler is with us from Channel 9, is the chief NRL reporter with Channel 9. And was there some news yesterday? Danny, good morning.
Morning, gents. A big news day.
Now, not often do we have coaches not performing their roles on game day these days, unless, of course, there's a bub on the way, and sometimes I'll step out of the coach's box for that. But Wayne Bennett, one of the biggest names in the game, won't be coaching this week. Explain why, if you can, please.
Well, put simply, he breached the bubble of the NRL in a quite a, I don't know, disappointing and almost a non-thinking, perhaps even arrogant way. He decided it was okay to go out to lunch at a fairly swish inner Sydney restaurant. And he was busted, simple as that. He then turned up to training with the Rabbitohs yesterday morning whilst the league world was going a bit crazy with this story that he'd breached the protocols and had to front a media conference, a scheduled one, shortly afterwards, where he basically said it's all a bit too confusing. You know, he didn't mean to break the rules, but the ironic part of all of it is, and probably the disappointing part, is that Wayne Bennett, apart from being a highly respected, the most premierships of a current coach, he said that he was part of the Apollo committee, which formed the rules, which got the game back up and running. And to say that it was hard to follow or whatever really didn't wash with many people.
He was quite defiant. I saw a bit of that press conference yesterday. He was quite defiant when questions were being asked of him. Is that because he was caught out and just a bit embarrassed, or he was just being a bit churlish?
That's Wayne. That's just how he carries himself. I quite like Wayne. I've not always had a good relationship with him, but I admire what he's done in the game. That's where my fondness for him comes from. And he's behind the scenes. He's quite a media worker, maybe even a manipulator. He knows how to work the media. But he has to front up and answer questions. And look, I give him credit for at least carrying through with the media conference, but at no point did he really say sorry or admit he was wrong, which was probably things that we don't hear come out of Wayne Bennett's mouth ever.
So, Danny, as a result of this, my understanding is he has to go into a quarantine situation for a couple of weeks. Is that right? And that would obviously mean he can't coach them?
Yeah, so the first thing was he had to have a test, so we're awaiting the result of that. That'll probably come back this morning sometime. Where, look, everybody's expecting it to be a negative. Then he has to go into isolation to keep away from his team. At this stage, it's been described as a two-week lockdown. I think there may be a fine still to come for Wayne Bennett because it's just not good enough for him. I mean, I don't know if you're aware, there's another breach as well yesterday. A player, Paul Vaughan, who was supposed to be playing in last night's Dragons versus Roosters game. He's an Origin player and a very senior member of the Dragon side. And he went to a cafe down the south coast of New South Wales and was sprung by a Roosters fan who noticed that he was out having breakfast when he wasn't supposed to be. So we're dealing with it on multiple fronts, and the boss of the game, Peter Volandis, is fuming.
Yeah, well, so
he should be. So he should be. Two of the biggest names in the game, breaching protocol. So he'll have to have the test as well. Same process for him, go through the test and then the quarantine as well?
Test and lockdown. And, again, people expect him to come back negative because he wasn't in a hot spot. But the thing with both of them is that Wayne couldn't say that was the first time he was out for lunch. I think that people know that he's been lunching regularly at that restaurant. And I also think Paul Vaughan, since after I broke the story, I had multiple people contact me saying, well, he's been doing this for a little while. There's been other locations I've seen him at. So, look, Vaughan, when I spoke to him before I broke the story, I said, listen, I'm doing this. At least he didn't lie about it. He admitted he did the wrong thing. He wasn't happy I was doing the story, but he copped it on the chin. So he's now been absolutely hammered by his coach, Paul McGregor, for his lack of responsibility because he's a senior player, and they lost last night. And they lost a game where, you know, I'm not saying I would have won if he was there, but he would have had a considerable influence to the middle of the field where he may have been able to prevent the Roosters from being so dominant in that area.
Brent Harvey joins us, the AFL Games record holder. He's a champ from the Kangaroos, and he's with us on a Friday morning. Good morning, Boomer.
Good morning, boys. Hope you've had a good week.
Had a very good week. Thank you very much. Great to have you with us. Are you sort of got your wits about you? Do you know where you are in the rounds and the games, or are you losing track?
No, I am losing track. I'm in a little tipping competition with a couple of mates, and they send a text message on a Thursday or something and say, don't forget to put your tips in. And then next week it's on a Tuesday. Don't forget to put your tips in. I'm thinking, I just did it 3 days ago, but it's coming around so quick, half, and it's footy, 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 isn't it? I know there's 33 games in 20 days, but, gee, there's a lot on. And what makes it really interesting is the double headers on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night.
Yeah.
That sort of throws you out a bit as well. I would have loved to have seen the double header on a Friday night tonight, but I'm not the scheduler. I don't schedule the fixture, do I?
Well, there's only one game for the round tonight, so that's interesting. It's the last game of the round, Essendon and the Giants, which we'll talk about shortly, and will be the focus of the Friday face-off too, just by the way, which, of course, I'm leading convincingly at the moment. Don't go too deep into it. But we start round 11 tomorrow. Boone, what are you hearing out of the Hubs and out of the Kangaroos at the moment with the way the players are coping with the reduced breaks, the 4 and 5 day breaks that we're experiencing at the moment?
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because the Kangas have come off a 4 day break into a 4 day break as well. So there's no doubt that you're seeing players going to be rested. And we spoke a couple of weeks ago, maybe the NBA system, where if you're up by 30 points or down by 30 points, you maybe bring off your gun players for the second half of the last quarter. And I think you're going to have to see that start happening very, very shortly, if not tonight, tomorrow night, etc. It's certainly going to take a toll. I can remember playing, and when you come off a six-day break into a six-day break, everybody used to complain. Or two games.
Yeah, that's right.
Eddie had two games at Eddie Had Stadium. Everyone said, "Oh, I don't know how I'm going to pull up from that." Well, please give me a spell, because you're coming off a four-day break into a four-day break, and you better get used to it, boys. You've got about 8 or 9 weeks to go, and suck it up, because it's going to be a tough little period for you.
You're right. 6 days into 6 days used to cause absolute chaos, didn't it? Now you've got 4 days into 4 days. You just got to find a way.
Yeah, you know what it is? Mentally, though, mentally, when you had a 7 or an 8 day break and you got to a Wednesday and you still weren't on your main session, mentally it told you had 2 days extra to recover. And then when you played on a 5 day break or a 6 day break, by Tuesday, you're nearly ready to go, because mentally, your brain's told you, you've got to recover. You've got to do this. You've got to get better sleep. You've got to stay in the ice baths for an extra 10 minutes, and then you're ready to go. So mentally, it does affect you. And I'm sure the coaches have set the... Set it in place where mentally you're just going to have to get around it and just stop saying, "Oh, we've come off a four-day break into a four-day break." Because if you do that mentally, it actually wears you down physically, I reckon. So I think mentally would be a big part of it.
So, Rama, is that why we're seeing the more experienced teams going so well, or going better at this stage of the season? Because there is that experience benefit and the mental edge in understanding just things you need to do, rather than being a young team and not really knowing who's who in the zoo, let alone your spot in the system. But these experienced teams have got players that have been around a while and can deal with the challenges outside of the physical challenges.
Yeah, and Boomer makes a good point. I think they're just getting on with it. They understand, okay, what it is. So they know their body really well. They know what type of recovery they need as an individual. And they're just getting on with it. So I think we all understand the circumstances of why this is happening. I'm finding it quite exciting, to be honest with you, to see how teams react to these situations. The NBA style of taking players off the court, it's probably where the coaches wanted a couple more on the bench, so they could do that. Like, with four on the bench, there's probably another 3, 4, 5 players that you still want to take off the ground when the game gets out of reach or you're too far ahead. So that's where the coaches did push for that. But, yeah, the issue still is half, and I think what clubs are still very, very conscious of is, because of the part of the season we're in, is trying to limit the injuries still. And obviously we saw last night with a re-injury to Adam Treloar with the hamstring. I know it was his quad, but he's hurt another part of his body because of the limited preparation that he had coming into these games. Now, Collingwood travel again. So they're travelling again off a short break. So what the Collingwood do with their team now moving forward? Because I still think the next part, I know we've got round 13 already, but I still think the season's going to be compressed again. They're just going to want to push these games out. So if a guy does a hamstring, which is usually, 21 days or whatever they say now, that's not 4 weeks. That's potentially 6 games. So clubs have got to be really, really mindful of the actual load they're putting into each player each week.
So we'll be seeing a few more managed players next couple of weeks, you reckon?
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely no doubt. So that's the fine line, half, and Whitey here. Do you say to the team, okay, rather than managing 3 or 4 players over the next couple of weeks, we're going to manage 10 players, because we want those 10 players to have an actual 7-day break, a normal break where they can do a normal recovery, a normal training week to get themselves up and firing, rather than have 3 players come out, manage another 3 players the next game. Have a chunk, pick a game where you go, okay, we're just going to have to roll the team over this week completely to give our absolute stars the rest that they require.
But this is the beauty of what Geelong's being able to do, and I think Chris Scott and his coaching team have got to be given a lot of credit, that they're resting players in games. So Patrick Dangerfield, now in the last four games, has just played out of the goal square next to Tom Hawkins and only went into the centre bounce in that last quarter for 10 minutes when the game got a bit tight. So I think that's going to be as much the management of players as them not playing at all. How you can actually manage their game time so they stay out of the cut and thrust of the contest to keep themselves as fresh as possible and get them playing every week.
That's got risk associated with it, Boomer, though, because you have Dangerfield coming out of the goal square. The amount of high-intensity running that he has to do makes him more susceptible to those hamstring type of injuries because he's bursting.
Dangerfield's a power athlete, but he's got a great endurance base. So he can run around at a 60% intensity the whole day, but when he's forward, he won't be going at 60% because the ball will come down there every 2 or 3 minutes. So he'll be going at 100%, and that's what he's talking about, the hamstrings and the injury rate at the minute with all those injuries. So that's exactly what Ram is saying.
So we're about halfway through this almost experiment of the footy frenzy of playing footy every day, and I've been big on the fact that if the AFL... in an ideal world, they would have this in a normal season in the middle part of the year where teams could have their buys, but you could have a situation where through a school holiday period in the middle of winter, potentially, you could have footy on every night. So what is, I think everyone's doing at the moment is they're just doing case studies on what works and what doesn't work. Now, if players continue to get injuries and we have a situation where teams just can't put out even close to their best teams, or teams have their finals chances dashed or premiership chances dashed because they've lost too many players, well, we can't do it moving forward because it's unsustainable. But, gee, if they can find a way to make it work, I think it's something we could see on a more regular basis.
Whitey, I absolutely love that idea. I love it. Where that bye period is and it gets a little bit stagnant and everyone goes, oh, I might not watch footy just this week. You compact it and you do your five games in five days, but the other guys are having a bye around you, so you've always got footy. I really like that. The other thing I'd love the AFL to do now is step in and just look after the welfare of the players. And Rama touched on it before, just around extra people on the bench. If we continue to see the trend of hamstrings and quads, soft tissue injuries, etc., there's no reason why the AFL can't come in and say, rightio, for the next 6 weeks, we're going to give you six on the interchange, just so you can rest and maintain those players and they're not going at 100% for 6 weeks in a row. And the last point, I think the value of winning right now through this middle period of the season, because we know what happens in the regular season, in the normal season, is you get to round 20, 21, 22, 23, and you can rest those players. But now, if you're not in a position to do that, because you want to make finals, you can't rest your guns. So the importance of winning these games in the middle part of the season is super, super important.
Seemingly, we'll see how it unfolds in the future, but certainly a very important part of the season, and one of those important games is tonight, boys. Let's have a look at the Friday night game. It's the Giants and the Bombers, or the Bombers and the Giants, depending on which way you want to see it. The home team officially is the Giants at Metricon Stadium tonight. Check your local guides for times and that type of thing. Got four ins for the Bombers. McKenna, Langford, Guelphy and McKernan come in for Ham, Gleeson, Kale and Big Tom. Bell Chambers has been managed. For the Giants, Callum Ward, Mumford and Xavier O'Halloran come in for Matt DeBoer, Sam Jacobs, who's managed, and Toby Green, who's injured, and it will be a blow for the Giants not being there. Boomer, they come off a couple of wins, the Giants over the Tigers and the Suns. The Bombers got mauled by the Lions last weekend. What are you expecting tonight and Friday night footy?
Yeah, I might start with the Bombers because they were bitterly disappointing last week. We spoke on this segment about Essendon not being able to kick enough goals. Well, in the end, they kicked three goals. They come from Parrish kicked one and I think who kicked two goals for the Bombers last week? It was another midfielder. Devin Smith kicked two. I think, and Parrish kicked one. So they got no goals from their tall forwards. I know McKernan comes back into the team tonight, but he's probably going to have to play ruck with Bell Chambers out. And 28 points to 91. Brisbane had 37 inside 50s to Essendon's 41. So it wasn't a lack of getting the ball inside 50. It was just a lack of getting it to a forward and being able to kick a score. So for me, it's going to be the Giants all over. I'm spewing Toby Greens out because I love watching him play. He's nearly my favourite player in the competition to watch. He's an angry little ant, but I'll tell you what, he can back it up on the field. He's a star. Gold Coast last week let the Giants. The top seven possession winners were Whitfield, Kelly, Hopper, Williams, Taranto, Coniglio and Perryman. Now, if any team lets the Giants do that, they win the flag for me, because that's 142 possessions between the top seven on the field, and they're their best players. So Essendon have to negate their midfield, and if you get on top of their midfield, Dylan Shea will be licking his lips with Matt De Boer out, no doubt. Yes. A couple of the Essendon backs will be licking their lips with Toby Green out. So they're a little sniff, Essendon, just because they need to bounce back. I still don't know where they're going to kick their goals from. They can't rely on their midfielders to kick all their goals. So for me, it's a Giants onslaught if the midfield continues to play like they do.
So you're a close Essendon watcher, Whitey, more than others, more than most, in fact, I reckon, on the planet. How do they beat the Giants tonight, considering, as Boomer said, they let the Brisbane Lions maul them last week, and from an efficiency perspective as well, not being able to stop their entries and the way they brought the ball forward in their forward half. How do they stop the Giants tonight?
Well, I'm like Boomer. They've got to find a way to score. Now, the thing about this game is that the Giants have also struggled to score. And what is keeping Essendon in a lot of games recently is their good defence. Now, on gut feel, you'd say Essendon are out of form, but you look at their last six, they're three wins and three losses. They kicked that last goal against Carlton, they would have been 4-2. So the problem for the Bombers is that two of their last three games, they've been dreadful. They were terrible last week against Brisbane, and they weren't much better against the Bulldogs. And the other game was a win against Adelaide, which is no currency at all, particularly considering they only just got over the line. So I don't think they're playing well enough to beat the Giants, and I think the Giants are building. They're still a long way off their best. They too need to hit the scoreboard a little bit more. But when you just compare, I think the Giants have got a better midfield narrowly, but if you look at the big difference in this game, just looking at the forward line of the Giants compared to the forward line of Essendon, I think that's where the game's going to be won, and I think the Giants will win and win quite well.
I think Rammer's back with us. Rammer, are the Bombers tonight?
I think they're a chance tonight. Obviously, with Toby Green being out of the team, he's the Giants' most dangerous forward. So what that does then allow is McKenna coming back into the team and Saad, that extra run, which I think is really, really important for the Bombers, because when those two run, Essendon become really unpredictable. And I think that's really important for the way Essendon play. And those two actually deliver the ball into the forward line with their foot skills. So I agree with Whitey. The Essendon's trouble at the moment is their forward line and the way it's functioning. But it is what it is. They don't have any other soldiers really to choose from, so they've got to make do with what they got down there. Sean McKernan comes back in to take a mark, and Kyle Langford was actually pretty good there against Adelaide when he played forward. So the midfields match up okay. I think McGrath's now a real bona fide midfielder within the competition, the way he's gone about it this year. I like his working close. He uses the ball well. He doesn't panic, which I like. So the big thing for tonight's game, for Essendon, it's to play with dare and dash, but also pressure. They applied no pressure last week. It was last Friday against Brisbane. But the Giants, it's their ball movement. The Giants have got to have dare with their ball movement. If they don't, they become a really predictable and easy side to play against. Essendon's key defenders are quite good and capable, so they should be able to look after the Giants. The Giants forwards, if they don't move the ball quickly.
Who's winning, Rammer?
Fair.
The Giants just.
Whitey?
Giants.
Boomer?
Giants for me.
Giants for me as well. I don't think the Bombers are going anywhere near well enough.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.